It's getting close to Christmas time, and if you've got a turkey hunter in your family, make it easy on yourself and go check out Bloodline Custom Calls. Made right here in Louisiana, the Bloodline Gang are some of the most hardcore turkey hunters you'll ever meet, which means these people know what a turkey call is supposed to sound like. And if you're looking for something like a cool hat, an extra comfy hoodie, they've got the best merchandise you'll find. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook and Instagram, Bloodline Custom Calls. I promise you're going to find something there that you like. This week with the Wise Eye has been a little slow. I'm not seeing a lot of rut activity, but what the Wise Eye helps me with is probably its strongest points. The graphs that break down the movement for me. That's right, this camera has an activity chart that shows the best day, the best wind direction and wind speed, if it was raining or if it were sunny when the most pictures were taken, the best lunar phase, and even the barometric pressure. This camera takes all the guesswork out of trying to decide when the best time to hunt is. The information is just right there in front of you. You can find them at the Digital Outdoor Store on Facebook. You can find them on Amazon or in person at K&M Coffee, Corks and Camo in Farmerville. Trust me, these cameras are the next generation of cell camera. Get in on the new technology now. The deer we're going to talk about today, guys, is super impressive. I was scoring deer at K&M Coffee, Corks and Camo, and Joe Simmons walked in with this deer. And the first words out of my mouth was, where did that deer come from? Their circumference measurements is what drew me to it first. Then I saw the main beam length. I knew that this animal was special. Not only did it come from right here in Louisiana, but it came from Lincoln Parish in North Louisiana, right next door to where I'm at in Union. I'm telling you, this deer is amazing. The story is even better. Do me a favor. Listen to this podcast all the way through. Please, all the way through until it ends. Not till Joe, till the interview gets finished, but until it ends. I'm going to do my best to make this extra special for everybody. Joe and I, we got on a road that was really emotional during this podcast. I want you to listen to it. And I'm telling you, it's good. It's really, really good. So give it a listen. Tell me what you think. This deer right here is one that, man, when I saw it come in, I was fortunate enough to score this deer this past Thursday night at K&M Coffee, Corks and Camo in Farmerville. We have a scoring contest where we score the local deer. And I've had a pile of out-of-state deer come in. I'm not going to lie to you. I've had a lot of out-of-state deer. And when this deer came in, number one, I could tell it there was a good chance it was local because of the color. Out-of-state deer typically have a whiter horn. This one, this dude is chocolate. I mean, it was like Hershey's chocolate. And then I asked Joe Simmons. I said, Joe, where'd that come from? You said, right here. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Joe, thank you for taking time to come on here and talk about your deer, brother.
Oh, yes, sir. I appreciate it. I appreciate it, sure enough.
Now, Joe, you from Pea Ridge, Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
Tell us first off where Pea Ridge is.
Pea Ridge is north of Ruston and right outside of Dubuque. You come up 33 and you can either hit Pea Ridge Road or come up 822 and you'll be right smack in the middle of it.
Don't blink or you'll miss it.
No, that's right. No, you blink and you'll be out. You'll be done up in Dubuque or all the way to Farmville.
Yeah. Now, Pea Ridge is a good spot. Let me tell y'all folks about the Pea Ridge people. Pea Ridge people are good country folk. They know everybody knows everybody. They're going to give you the shirt off their back. But I learned at an early age in high school, you don't get them riled up. Don't get them riled up. They'll fight you in a minute. The deer that you killed, brother, tell us about, first off, let's talk about you. I want to get a background on you. Tell me about your hunting, how you grew up hunting, and how you're hunting now.
All right. Well, I'm going to say, ever since I was young, you know, my daddy, he hunted and fished and whatnot. And, I don't know. I got to be, I think I killed my first deer maybe when I was 12 or, no, hold on, let me think now. 11 years old. And at this point in time, daddy really didn't lease no land around here to hunt, you know. And actually had a man out of the community, which he ain't much older than me. I looked at him when I was young to be a man, but he wasn't maybe 10 years older than me. And it was actually Josh Jenkins. He lives down in Alexandria. Well, anyway, he's like, him and daddy was good friends. He knew daddy from working up there at McKinney's and whatnot. And he told me, he's like, hey, I want to take your boy hunting and whatnot. And so we went hunting right here in Pea Ridge. And sure enough, 6-point come out. Well, I was nerved up, you know, didn't know, think what was going to happen. He was good piece out there, and I was like, man, ain't no way I'm gonna hit this deer. I ain't never even shot at a deer yet, you know. And so I shot. Anyway, long story short, we didn't find it. Well, the next year, you know, I was still, I was itching, I was trying to kill my first deer. Well, daddy talked to a local man out here in Pea Ridge that has a bunch of pasture land, and talked to him and said, hey, would you mind if me and my boy hunt the edge of your pasture? And he said, no, Tommy, go on, do what you want to do, you know. And that man there is Jim Frazier. And that's where I killed my first deer. It was a big old doe stepped out down there in the edge of that field. And that was my first deer. Shot her down there about 200 yards.
Now, and, I want you to do something real quick for me.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to tell folks who your daddy was.
All right. My daddy was Tommy Simmons. Worked up there. Well, he's had a bunch of jobs, but most folks know him from either the Bell South Phone Company and McKinney Honda up there, the bow man at McKinney Honda.
Mr. Tommy was the bow guy. One of the first bow guys that I ever, you know, I knew about Richard and Michael over at Simmons. And I spent a lot of time in Ruston. And so I got to meet and got to know a little bit of Mr. Tommy. And I'm going to tell you, man, I was probably one of the best guys I knew and one of the best bow guys that I've ever known. I mean, the guy knew what he was doing when it came down to archery.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. He had a lot of people, you know, that wanted him to, you know, work on their bows. I mean, you know, I've talked to so many folks after he passed away, and it was like, man, I'm telling you, man, we always took our bows up there just so your daddy could work on them. Cause you know, he knew what he was, you know, knew what he was doing. He'd been doing it for a long time. And as cantankerous as he was, everybody loved him. You know, I mean, he just like anybody else might have a bad day or, you know, can't ever tell, but you know, for the most part, you know, everybody sure enough loved him. And that opened my eyes, you know, when all that happened a couple years ago.
A lot of respect for him, man. Everybody in the community should have a lot of respect, and I know they do have a lot of respect for your dad. I mean, that, like I said before, you know, us archery guys, we're kind of weird. We don't just let anybody just touch our equipment, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, because and I was very confident. If I needed it worked on and Mr. Tommy was going to work on it, I knew it was in good hands. I knew it was in good hands. So you killed your first deer. Now let's move. How are you hunting after that?
All right. So after that, I got old enough to where, you know, daddy and mama was letting me go hunting with my granddaddy, you know. And for the next, just say I was 10, 11 years old when I killed that deer with my daddy. For the next 5 to 6 years until I started driving, you wasn't going to see me without my granddaddy or my granddaddy without me. Me and him was going to the woods squirrel hunting. We'd go deer hunting. We went down to they'd really see us most of the time anywhere between Shudrant there or Douglas and the Darbone Spillway. That was our hot spot. You know, we'd go down there, catch white perch, catch catfish. You catch whatever you wanted down there. So for the next 5-6 years of my life, it was me and my granddaddy deer hunting, squirrel hunting, just doing whatever there was for a young man to do then, you know.
Yeah. And I tell you, man, there's a lot of us that had a similar experience with our grandparents. You know, it's just, there's something about them old men. You know, they're, number one, they're old, so they're a lot more patient. You know,
right. I know. 100%.
My old man, I mean, he had patience, but he still got a little, you know, wound up when something didn't go just right. But my grandfather, he just had that way. I mean, it was just,
right.
Nothing was that big of a deal. And he just, and number two, one, I guess I would tell you, one of the biggest things that I drew from my grandfather was woodsmanship skills.
Yes, sir.
You know, I mean, they knew where the best feed trees were. They knew where the yep. fishing holes were. They knew their way around the woods. I mean, that was back before GPS, back before anything. I don't remember ever getting turned around in the woods with Papa, you know?
Now, I'm telling you.
Shoot, I'll get turned around in a minute, you know, if I ain't careful.
Oh, when I hunted with mine, and I'm sure everybody's this way, but it was the old school hunting. The old school fishing, when we went squirrel hunting before the leaves fell off the tree, me and him would slip up them hollers, you know, just them little, you know, nowadays there's more pine trees, it seems like, than oaks. So you just slipping up a creek bottom with some oak trees on it, slip up in there, sit on a log, and you might sit there 10, 15 minutes. And I can promise you, I'd done been ready to get up. And he said, no, now just wait, they coming. And sure enough, here in a minute, you hear something in them trees and look up there, it might be. 4 or 5 squirrels around you, you know.
Yep.
And as far as, you know, a fishing, I mean, my granddaddy, he's never had a fish finder. Maybe he's had one on the newest boat that he did buy there before he passed away, and all it did was show depth.
Yeah.
You know.
They were the fish finder.
Exactly. Yeah. We'd go down to them creeks down there, blow it, spillway, boy. And we'd ease up to them treetops, and we'd tie off to it. He said, all right, now, we're going to put that thing down in that treetop now and just wait. I was like, all right. And naturally, I'd be hung up 6-7 times before I ever get it down there.
All of us were.
And, you know, and here in a minute, he'd be pulling one out. And I'd look at him. I said, gosh, dog, man, what's happening? And I ain't lying to you one bit. He'd look at me. He said, you ain't holding your mouth right.
Exactly. I mean, said, you could throw right beside that old man, and he's going to catch the fish, and you won't.
Yeah.
I know.
100%. 100%.
So you learned a lot from your grandfather.
Yep.
So how did it go after that? How did you handle it? How did you move on after that?
Well, naturally, when I started driving, you know, I hate it. I think about it all the time. But naturally, when I started driving, I started going to buddies' houses, and I think when I actually started driving, a bunch of my buddies was in a duck hunting, and I went duck hunting with them, you know, and it was good, and it's fun, don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't, you know, it didn't take a hold to me like deer hunting did,
right?
You know, and and I still went fishing here and there and yonder, and but when I was probably, I don't know, a little bit before I started driving, my mom and daddy, they was talking to some, you know, distant relatives that they, you know, keep in touch with or whatnot. And they're like, hey, we've got some land here in Lincoln Parish, and we ain't doing nothing with it. We don't do nothing with it or whatever. If y'all want to hunt it, we can go over and look at it and see what y'all think. So we went in there, and this ends up being the property that, you know, I killed this deer on. Well, got over there, and my daddy, if anybody knew him, whenever he does something, he does it to the top. I mean, he's 110% in anything he ever does. So we looked at it, and we're like, yeah, it'd be good. We'll hunt it, and we signed the lease, whatever. And it wasn't long. He had a buddy that had a dozer, and they said, look, you can do whatever with this land, use it, it's yours. And so he went around that whole son of a gun with that dozer pushing out shooting lanes and spots for stands, you know, and ever since, I'm gonna say 14-15 years old, that's where that has been my primary spot to deer hunt in Louisiana. And that was my only spot to deer hunt basically until, you know, I started going off to Kansas with Jason and them.
Right.
Right. You know, and Daddy, I mean, like I said, we built feeders for over there. We always planted food plots. And for several years when we hunted there, he would try his best, you know, as far as he could to feed over there most of the year, even at, you know, in the off season, you know, to keep deer coming, you know, and shoot. And he showed me, you know, what it took to have a place that you can always go to and see deer. If you, you know, if you need it, if you're like, man, I just want to go see and watch some deer, you know, you just slip in there when everything's right, you know, you can always see you a couple deer, you know, in there on a hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he showed me, you know, he basically taught me my work ethic, really. You know, when you put your mind to something, you do it as best as you can, and you can reap the benefits afterwards, you know.
Right. I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
So you hunted here for a little while. Did you ever kill anything mounted to much?
Yeah. About 7 years ago, I think, I killed in that it ain't in the same deer stand because me and my daddy-in-law just built a new deer stand for this place this year. But the same spot within 10 or 15 yards of the same spot on the shooting lane, I killed 138-inch 10-point right there.
Okay. And that's getting on up there for our area. You know, you get you get above 130, you know, that's a bigger deer, you know. 140,
yeah, I mean,
that's a real good deer. 150 plus, right. That's a hammer, you know.
That's right, yep.
So you in that good deer range for sure.
Yeah, that's right. You know, when you shoot a deer like that, everybody's like, golly, man, that's a dang good deer. And you know, go on about your business. You're like, man, Joe killed a good one the other day, you know, or so-and-so killed a good one, you know.
How wide was it? That's what they'll ask you. How wide? We didn't know nothing about no score. How wide was it, you know?
Everybody wanted to know how wide and how tall. And then the old men, all they wanted to know is how much he weighed.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because that was where the good stuff was right there, how much he weighed.
That's right.
So, all right, so you mentioned going to Kansas. Now, your brother-in-law, Jason Cooper, with Cooper Welding.
Uh-huh. That's right.
You know, they're got listeners, Joe is tied in with the guys over at Bloodline, probably helps a little bit with Bloodline. Bloodline Custom Calls, you know, good friends of mine. You know, I consider them a sponsor of the podcast because they help me out a lot. They're good guys. And Jason Cooper is, unfortunately, Joe's brother-in-law.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, I didn't tell you, but before we scored your deer, I was at work, and Jason, he sent me a text. He said, hey, you need to tell Joe all that running around with Jason Cooper's done paid off and that I done taught him everything that he knows to kill his deer. He said, now pump it up now. And I said, okay. So he loves you. I just want you to know he loves you.
Oh yeah. He wasn't going to let me take my glory all by myself. He wanted me to share it with him.
Oh, absolutely, man.
Yeah,
absolutely. So when did y'all start going out? When did you start going out to Kansas with them?
It's 2022. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was, I've been this year and then I went last year. Year before last is my first year.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had any success in Kansas?
Yes, sir. I got a show enough cool story about the first one I killed, or I think it is in my mind. So the first year that we go, Jason's like, man, I want you to come, you know, this, that, and the other. It's going to be me, you, Wes, and Mark Thetis. I said, all right, perfect. You know, I'm ready. So we did our draw and we drew. Well, that was 2020. And that January is when my daddy passed away of that year. And so we go up there and we do all our work, get all this stuff ready. And Jason, they had already been up there 1 year prior to me. And he said, man, I'm telling you, it ain't nothing like you've ever seen. It's just like big deer everywhere. I said, all right. So we go up there and we hunting and I'm seeing deer, you know, and, it's just something I've never seen that many deer and that big a deer in the numbers, you know, as far as bucks at this time. And so I get on a stand, and boy, I'm sitting in that stand and watching everything, and thinking about Daddy, you know, because he loved bow hunting. I mean,
oh yeah.
And if he'd have had it his way, he'd have wanted me to bow hunt predominantly and not worry about a rifle, you know. But I get that rifle itch every once in a while, you know.
Yes, sir, I know.
But so I was sitting on that stand, and sure enough, he ended up being 146 inch 8-point. Come walking in. Well, I think I had killed one buck with my bow in Louisiana prior to this deer. And so when he come in, you know, I was shook up. And I was like, all right, boy, you're going to have to settle down, or you won't hit an elephant at 20 yards if you get tore up.
Yeah.
You know? And so this deer is coming, and there's a feeder right there at 20. And he gets behind a cedar bush, and I said, all right, I need to pull back. So I pulled back, and naturally, as luck would have it, he stopped. Instead of just coming on through, he stopped and started trying to wind me. And I said, no, no. Because I haven't, up until then, I haven't had just the best of luck with a bow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd always hit him in the shoulder, miss, or whatever else. And I said, Lord, please. Please help me hold this bow. Please. I ain't going to be able to hold it. And I was standing up in that stand, and I ain't lying to you. As soon as I said it, it's like I felt my daddy reach around and grab, like hold my left hand steady and grab a hold to my right hand when I was holding them strings. And up until that point, I done went to shaking. And when that happened, boy, it was like, nothing else mattered. Like everything was just rock solid, you know. And soon as that, I mean, right as that happened, that deer walked out and put his head in that feeder. And I put that sucker right behind his shoulder and squeezed it off. And he went 60 yards, and it was like perfect shot. I mean, it just blood, you know, it was just awesome deal. And boy, I got there and everybody was tore up for me, and I was like, man, y'all never believe it. I said, I'll tell y'all what had happened in that stand. And I told them, and man, I couldn't help it. I was squalling.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Squalling, you know. And it gives me chills thinking about it now, because I'm telling you, it's the most realest feeling I've ever felt.
I can believe
him grab a hold of that bow, and that's something I'll never forget.
Yeah. I like that, brother.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah. It was rough on me there for a little while.
I bet it was.
Tears of joy, you know, no doubt. But when something like that happens, it'll touch you, you know.
It'll touch you, and what it does, man, is it kind of lets us know, you know, that they are still with us.
That's right.
And their memory and their presence will always be around, you know, no matter the situation. They're always going to be looking out for us. So. I like that story, my friend. I really, really do. Because that means a lot for me, because I knew your daddy, you know.
That's right.
And knowing, you know, that's probably one of the coolest things I've heard.
Yep. It was something. And so I killed that deer, and I'm like, my gosh, man, I'll never kill a deer bigger than that, you know. I said, it definitely won't be as cool as that, you know, like that happening. So we get through, and so the next year comes around, and I'm like, man, I can't wait to get to Kansas, man. Like, this is my second year, and I done told myself, I said, I probably won't kill nothing. I said, but I killed something last year. I'm good. As long as somebody else will kill, I'm ready to go. And we get there, and I think the first trip, you know, when I killed at 8-point, I killed, like, on the third day we was there. So it was a pretty quick hunt. I didn't have to hunt a whole, you know, like a whole week, you know, to kill one. So this time I think I hunted about 6 days, and I got to thinking, I said, well, I guess I won't kill one this time. I said, I hadn't really seen much, you know, or whatnot. And so one morning got in from hunting, and me and another buddy, I said, man, I'm about to take me a nap. I'm tired. He said, me too. So he go get in his room, I get in my room, and I fall asleep. And boy, wasn't long. It woke me up, and it was time to get up anyway. But I was sitting there asleep and went to dreaming. And I can't tell you where we was. All I remember, we was in a hay pasture, a big hay barn. And for whatever reason, I was in the pasture, walking up to the hay barn. And I walked up to that hay barn, and in the hay barn was sitting in two lawn chairs with my daddy and my granddaddy. And I didn't tell this earlier, but my granddaddy had passed away shortly after my daddy. And boy, I walked up in there. I remember it. Walked up in there. I said, "What y'all doing here? You know, what are y'all doing here? Where have y'all been?" You know, in my dream, I was confused. And they said, "Oh, we've been here. We've been here the whole time. Where have you been?" You know. And I woke up squalling then. Woke up squalling, thinking, "Golly, boy, dang, they done got me crying in here all by myself. I'm trying to go deer hunting." Well, for whatever reason, I told myself then, I said, "Man," I said, that dream was a sign. I said, I feel like I'm going to do something this evening." And sure enough, I went hunting that evening, and a 156-inch 10-point coming out, about 30 yards, and by God, I drew back on him. It was one in bam, bam deals. He jumped out trying to run a doe, and I jerked that thing back and let it go, and it happened to hit where it needed to, you know. And found that deer, got over top of it, went to squalling, thinking about daddy again, you know. Just I've got a real hard tie to bow hunting and daddy, because, you know, I mean, for as long as I've ever had a bow, he was the one showing me right from wrong and working on it when needed working on, you know. And the bow I actually shoot now is one that he had rigged out at McKinney's for himself, that, you know, Richie and him would let him rig one out. He could hunt with it, but if somebody come up there wanting one, he could sell it and rig him another one out. Well, and this was a jam up deal too. After daddy passed away, they had that bow on display at his wake. And it was time to take it back to McKinney's, and I walked up there and talked to Richie and Brady. And I said, here's this bow, you know. They said, "All right, Joseph, well, thank you," you know. And I looked at him and said, "Well," I said, "if it's at all possible, whatever daddy's got in this bow or however much y'all want for this bow," I said, "daddy was the last one to physically touch this bow as far as any kind of screw being turned on it." I said, "Whatever it costs, I want it, no matter what," you know. And they did me as right as anybody ever has in my life. They sold me that bow for well under what it was worth, you know. And they told me, they said, "Man, your daddy was a dang good guy, and has did a lot for us up here." And I told them, I said, "I know he could been hard to be around sometimes when he got ill or whatever else, but even then," they both told me, they said, "Man, your daddy was a good man, and he has worked wonders up here at this place. And, you know, we appreciate him." And I told them, I said, "Man, y'all don't understand how much I appreciate this." And so that's the bow I still hunt with. And that's the bow I killed them, three deer with in Kansas.
You know, the dreams, I can relate. You know, I lost my mother in 2017.
Yes, sir.
And I've had two dreams about my mother, and it's usually during times of distress, you know, when I've got a lot on my plate or I've got something significantly going on. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it's their way of letting us know again, you know, "Hey, I'm here. Don't worry about it. You do your thing. Yep. I'm watching over you." And man, I'm sitting here, when you told me that, brother, I got chills, because I've been there. I've woke up squalling. It has happened to me. And you're exactly right. I mean, the emotions is what wakes you up. And it's almost as if you're wanting to go back to sleep so you can see it some more.
I know it. That's 100% true.
Yeah. God, man. Whew, yeah. Boy, you got me all
I know it. It'll get you bad.
That's why I want this podcast right here, man. This real relatable. I know there's somebody out there listening to it right now that's relating to what you and I are talking to. We're talking about. Yes, they know. They've been there. Whoo, Lord Jesus. Okay, so this deer here, let's talk about him. Talk to me about your history with this deer.
All right, well, hunting, you know, right there I'm hunting, and I don't have no whole lot of land that I'm hunting on where a buddy of mine through the woods. Me and him, dating back to that 10 point I killed, he had, you know, a couple years of pictures of that deer. Now, this was before me and him talked, you know, I killed the deer and, you know, pictures got out on it or whatever. And he texted me, said, "Hey, you killed deer. Congratulations. I want to see it, you know?" And well, that deer right there sparked off mine and his relationship as far as hunting wise. Okay. Ever since that deer 7 years ago, every year, early season, late season, it don't matter. He sends me pictures of what he's got as far as deer. And then I'll just text him and be like, "Well, this is all I got, you know?" So he tells me, he said, "Well, I'm sure all these deer be over on you for long. So just be ready. You know, that's what's coming." Cause it seemed like all his deer, he'd have, you know, a bunch of good bucks would, by the time it got ready for the rut, they just slowly meander on over here to my place and run does all over my place for whatever reason. And, so last year, Luke had been telling me, his name is Luke. Luke had been telling me, he said, "Man, there's another big deer in here. You know, be looking for him." And I said, "Well, you know, what's he look like?" And he sent me a picture of a big frame 9 point. And I knew that. I said, "Gosh, dog, that's the biggest deer I've ever seen come through here." And so I've been waiting all year for him to show up. Well, he never did. And I was coming back from Kansas and I was just bow hunting, but I had all my cameras running. And sure enough, end of December, right before January, that big joker showed up on my camera eating corn out of a 350-pound boss buck feeder. And I said, "Good night." So instantly I sent it to him. I said, "You must have run out of corn." I said, "Because he's over here eating my corn." And he said, "Well, he runs deer dogs, you know, so that's the time of year they were running wide open, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well," he said, "get him if you can, because I'm running dogs. I ain't even around there, whatnot." And I said, "All right," you know. So by the time he started coming in, it was right there at muzzleloader season and bow season. And honestly, I'd done killed a few deer. And by that late a season, I ain't too terribly worried about them, really. You know, I ain't that mad at them like I am early season. And so he went on still eating, and I watched him on camera, you know, drop his horns right there. I think he dropped them like the first week of February. And I called Luke. I said, "Hey, he dropped both sets of horns. You ready to go look for him?" He said, "Yeah." So me and him got out. We pulled up in there, and this is the first time he'd ever been on my place. And I showed him. I said, "Well, that right up there now, that's where I shot that 10 point years ago." He said, "Good night," you know, just showing him the layout. And anyway, we cut out through them woods and went from where I was getting pictures of him at to where he was. And looking at how dark chocolate horns those was, and we was going through that oak bottom and all, crud, we'd have had to step right on them to find them, you know?
Right, yeah, because they are. And folks, I know you're going to have a thumbnail, but I don't think pictures do this deer really justice on how dark this set of horns are. I mean, the contrast between the skull that you brought in attached to the rack is just, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
It makes them really stand out.
Yeah, it really does. But so we backed out and we're like, "Well, whatever, I guess, you know, we tried." And so naturally after that, I've totally forgot about that deer. It's getting time for turkey hunting and fishing and all that kind of good stuff.
Right.
So yeah. I ain't thought about him until, I don't know, sometime in September, I was throwing out corn and everything else. And I think I seen Luke at the gas station and he was getting corn or something. He said, well, I'm going to go throw some out, see what's happening, you know. And it wasn't a couple weeks after that I seen him again out somewhere. And he told me, he said, well, he's still in there. I said, no. He said, he sure is big. I said, no, man. He said, he's bigger. I said, good night. I knew he was big last year. And he sent me a picture of him in velvet. And, you know, velvet makes everything look bigger than it is already.
Oh, absolutely.
And I said, golly. And I thought to myself then, I said, well, I'll never kill him. Because if he comes, if he waits till January to come again, I'll never be able to kill him, you know. But I told Luke, I said, well, look, I said, you know how they do. I said, you better get him early before he tries to go. Because Luke's place was what I call his home. You know, that's where he was majority of the year.
Right.
And the only time he left was to go check does or run does or whatever else. Well, I think he hunted him several times and never really seen him, or maybe he eluded him once. Maybe, I don't know. One of them kind of deals. And he also runs dogs in Arkansas. So he told me, he said, all right, I'm going for Arkansas for a week or whatever. He said, you, it's all up to you now. And At this point, I still didn't have a picture of him. Well, and I was still running cameras. I'd been bow hunting the whole time, seeing some young bucks, you know, not really nothing extravagant. And I was hunting over there one evening and got off the bow stand and whatnot. I done seen bucks running does, and I get headed back to the house and my camera goes off on that box stand. I don't know, you know. At this point it was hour after dark or so, and there's a bunch of does there, and I said, yeah boy, I said, y'all eat it up, I can't wait for y'all to get hot and y'all bring something through there, you know. And a little while later, another picture, and I knew it was that buck. It was a blurry picture, but it was a tall rack buck coming in. Next picture I got, he was running them does off. And then I could see 100% then it was that big deer that Fraley had showed me. And I said, Lord Jesus. I said, he ain't never been here this early. I said, if I got a chance any at all, it'll be tomorrow. You know, because he was coming in to my land right there.
Yeah, because he's right on those does. And
that's right.
Yeah, you're right. If you've got a chance, it's going to be just as quick as you get in the woods with daylight.
That's right. And so, boy, I said, dadgum. And I was going to a buddy's house to eat supper that night. I said, dang. I said, I got to get there and get home. I got to get up and do, you know, get up early, whatever. Well, I hung out there naturally till probably 10, 11 o'clock. And when I woke up that next morning, I said, man, I'm tired. I said, but I am going. So I woke up, I got all my stuff, and I got in that gun safe. And like I said, I had been bow hunting predominantly ever since I got back from Kansas. I haven't shot a rifle this year. I hadn't zeroed one in. Now, they were all supposed to be good from last year, but, you know, I cleaned all of my guns but one last year because I hadn't shot it much. So I was like, well, I'm just going to grab this one I didn't clean. I know it should still be hitting like it should be, you know.
Right.
Should still be sighted in because I ain't cleaned it. So, get up, you know, grab the gun, slip in there, and cool, kind of misty morning. It just got through raining that Saturday, and that next morning it cooled off a little bit, and I said, boy, ain't no way I'm going to sit here and not see a deer. I'm going to see every deer I got in this country. And, oh my gosh, I hadn't seen a deer. And a buddy of mine sends me a picture. He done shot him a 10-point with his bow running a doe that morning. I said, oh my gosh, where's my does? And where's these bucks running these sunguns? I know they ought to be. And so he was tore up about it. So I ain't lying to you. I shut the windows on my box stand. And I grabbed my phone. I started talking to him. He said, "You still hunting?" I said, "Yeah, but I got the window shut in my stand." I said, "I can talk to you now." And he got to laughing. He said, "Well," he'd give me the whole rundown, and I told him, "Congratulations, man. Awesome." I said, "Look, when I get off the stand, I'm coming to it. I'm going to see it." He said, "All right, well, I'll be at my daddy's house." I said, "Okay." Well, hung up the phone, opened the windows back up, and sitting there looking, still ain't seen a deer. And I was just like, man, I said, "I guess they're going to move midday." I said, "I'm going to sit here until at least noon." And rocked on there a little while, and I looked down that shooting lane, and here he started out of the woods, or he was already started out of the woods when I seen him, like 65 yards from that box stand. Brand new box stand me and my dad-in-law just built.
Hey, how long after the conversation on the phone did you see?
I'm going to say I would really have to look back at my phone.
Well, just ballpark. I haven't really looked, how long
but
do you
I'm
guess?
Ballparking around about 30 minutes.
Okay.
You know, yeah. That's what I'm ballparking. It might not been that long. I really don't know. I don't think it was no longer than that, though.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that deer started coming out, and I seen it with my naked eye. I said, "My gosh, what a deer." So I never looked at his horns again. I grabbed that rifle, stuck it out that window, and I hollered at him to stop him. And when he stopped, he was starting to go in the woods on the opposite side. And I shot, boom. And he bucked up. And when he went down on his front end, his legs just buckled. And he kicked off the edge of that shooting lane. And boy, I was tore up. I still had that gun out the window looking. You know, I said, "Boy, if you come back by, I'm going to lay down on you again." You know,
that's right. Give him another one.
Oh, yeah. It had me tore up. And so instantly, it was probably 1 minute after I pulled the trigger, if it was that long, I called my buddy that just shot that 10 point. And I said, "Hey, man, you'll never believe it." I said, "But I just shot a big buck." He said, "We just got off the phone. I ain't even got my deer out the woods yet." I said, "I ain't lying to you, cuz. It's a big one." And he said, "Well, did you hit him good?" I said, "I had to." I said, "Last thing I seen was that front shoulder and when I lit that thing off." And he got to laughing. He said, "Well, look, just give him a little time and let me know." I said, "Okay." So called my wife. I said, and as soon as she answered, she said, "You get him?" I said, "Baby, I think I did." And she got all excited. I said, "Look, calm down now." I said, I got to go look for him first. I ain't no way I missed, but I want to make sure I didn't. And so she said, "All right, baby, let me know." So I think I gave him all in all, maybe 10 minutes, probably 8, 6, whatever. It wasn't long after I shot.
Let's just be honest. You unloaded your rifle, you gathered your stuff, and you got out of sand.
Yeah. Well, I can't even lie to you. I didn't even unload my rifle because I didn't want him to get away from me.
I know, that's right.
Just in case. So I slipped down out of that box stand, and like I told all my buddies, I was slipping down that shooting lane looking like Elmer Fudd. I had that thing draw.
You had it long stepping.
Oh, yeah, slipping, you know, real quiet. And I had to walk up and down. Like I said, he wasn't 65 yards from where my box stand was. Well, I didn't see any blood. And I said, "Oh, surely." And I'll go ahead and tell you this little backstory. I've got a pretty decent blood trailing dog. Well, I've tracked, you know, a lot of deer for a lot of folks right here in this community. And I was picking at them, you know, one day. I said, "Y'all a bunch of no shooting zone guns. You know it?" And they got to laughing and said, "You'll be there one day." I said, "Oh, yeah, I'm just messing with y'all." But I looked at myself. I said, "I'm going to have to go get my dog and put it on my deer, finally." But I haven't had to track one. She hadn't had to track a deer for me yet, luckily, but I know it's coming. I said, "Well, this will be the one." I said, "Whatever. I guess I'll have to bite the bullet and go get her." And I looked off in the woods. I found his track finally, and I found where he was tilling up them leaves going up through them woods.
Yeah.
And I probably took 2 steps in the woods, and I looked, and there that big joker was laying.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And that's when I got weak-legged and went to calling folks. Probably had a squealy mouth voice, you know, when I was telling them what I did, you know, one of them kind of deals.
Yeah, your voice went up a little bit, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they didn't know they said, "Hold on, slow down. What happened now?" You know?
You know, man, yeah. I got to be honest with you. And I'm just going to. How special would it have been to be able to call your daddy or your granddaddy?
Oh, man. I can tell you. Me and my wife was talking about that the other day. When we was at K&M, she said, I bet your daddy would have loved to be up here. I said, yep. And I said, it had been some old school, like back when I played baseball in high school, when I had just like an epic game, you know, didn't have no errors, hit good, everything was good. Daddy would like get so pumped up. He'd be chest bumping me, slapping my hands, just red faced. He's so excited. I said, it'd have been one of them kind of deals. If right up in the middle of K&M, if he'd have been there and seen or heard you say 174 3/8.
Well, I'm glad you, dude, you segued perfect to that. Because what I want to do right now is I want to play a clip. Because we go Facebook Live at K&M.
That's right.
And thank goodness, Marcy Cavanaugh, one of the owners of K&M, she went out and she bought us some lapel mics so that when we go Facebook Live, people can hear us talking. Uh-huh. And so we scored your deer. And when we said 174, you know, and just a few minutes after that, a few seconds after that, you know, it's just, you know, y'all were talking, the place just erupted. And I want the listeners to hear exactly what happened. I mean, this is listeners, keep in mind, this is a sporting goods store that has a restaurant in it, a little cafe. And so the cafe's full of folks. I mean, it's full of people. And so I want you to listen to the people who got excited for Joe. Y'all listen to this.
All right, folks.
Good.
As a scorable 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 point.
That's it right there on your phone?
Yeah. As a scorable 13 point, I came up with 174 3/8.
I promise. 174. Woo! God, dog.
All right, Joe. So, this weekend?
Yeah.
Me and you gonna talk.
All right.
For the podcast I got.
All right, that'll work.
All right. So, I got to score one of these. That's what I'm talking about, baby. 156. I told y'all, Lincoln Parish folks. 174 3/8. 156. 0.75.
Yes, sir.
174 3/8.
Like his one of his beams was 27 7/8, but he had.
Got it. 174 3/8.
Let's go.
No way.
Yeah, I can't believe that, dude.
Baby, that's a good. That's probably the biggest deer I've scored for around here. All right, Joe.
I'm glad you brought that dude up here.
Hold him.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Joe, turn him right there. Just right. That'll work. All right, cuz, I need you. Where's your score sheet at? Right here. Joe is a celebrity.
Yeah.
Fill that right there out. Yes. And then sign right there for me.
Look at that autograph.
Appreciate it.
Hey, yeah. That's a hoss, guys.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate y'all. Yes, sir.
So, Joe, tell me, how did that feel when those people got that excited for you?
Well, I'll give it to them from the first time I seen that number pop up on your phone. When I was looking. I was watching you tally all that up, and I was thinking to myself, man, I know he's going to be in the high 60s. I know it, man. And I was just like, if he's anywhere in the 60s, that's better than anything I've killed in Kansas anyway. So I don't matter. And when that number popped up on your phone, all I seen was 174. And I said, that's wrong. There ain't no. I said, no, he mislicked it. And I couldn't stand it no more. And you was talking, and I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
But I said, that's what he scores on your phone right there? And you said, that's what he scores, Joe. And I couldn't help it. I looked out there to everybody that was there for me, all my friends and family, and I said, 174. And all their jaws just hit the ground. They said my eyes was big as a cue ball, and my face done got red. I ain't lying. I got hot. I had to take my vest off. I didn't. I was like, man, this is blowing me out of the water. And then when you announced it to the whole place, it was just like, just, I mean, I couldn't believe it, man. Like, when everybody got to hooping and hollering, I said, my gosh, I guess this happens all the time when somebody brings, you know, a good sized deer up here. And man, everybody there was like, just, I mean, people I didn't know was clapping and hollering. And naturally I had the home crowd there, that I had a bunch of people there that knew me and that was proud for me, you know, and it just all kind of made it into one whole uproar, you know. And it was unbelievable. It really was. I mean, you know, and there's so many people that's told me after this, like, man, that's special, because, you know, it's not many times where most everybody that you come up to or talk to or that don't even know you is proud for you that you killed that, you know, killed a deer of a lifetime, basically.
Yeah, I'm going to let you know, you had some guys there from Union Parish that are of your daddy's generation. My yep. dad, Scotty Booth, Bruce Patton, Justin Bailey's dad. There were several guys there that were, I mean, they were part of that clapping and hooting and carrying on, because
that's
that old school generation that don't.
That's right.
They just as happy for you as if they had killed it.
That's right. Yep.
And that, my friend, you had, that was the coolest thing I think I've experienced at K&M. We do that scoring every Thursday night, folks. You can look at it. You can go like K&M Coffee, Corks, and Camo. You can watch it on Facebook Live, and I can almost guarantee you ain't going to hear what Joe got that night. You know, people will score deer, and people say good job and whatnot like that, but to get folks hollering and clapping and genuinely proud for a fellow hunter. Man, you know, that's what it's about, Joe.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to tell you, because that did my heart so good. That boy that scores, what helps me, John Duncan. John is,
yep.
He helps me. He's from Mississippi. He's a transplant over here in Sterling.
I got you.
He's one of my good friends. And after you left and after everybody had gone, me and him were just standing there. He said, you want me to tell you something? He said, that was the coolest thing I think I've ever experienced here. Yep. And I told him, I said, John, I think you're right. And I said, that's what hunting is supposed to be about right there.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
I'm going to tell you, because you got some good family, you got some good friends, you got some good support, and man, I hope you kill a pile more of them, just like what you killed with him.
It might take, I don't know, 7-8 years, but I'll take them odds.
Yeah.
I'll take them odds any day.
So, what did Jason Cooper, did he have any words of wisdom for you?
On this deer?
Yeah, or any of them, man. Is he?
Oh, yeah, no, his one of the more truer statements he's ever said, he said, every time you go to that deer stand and you don't see him, your chances is getting better. He said, you've got to hunt, you know, which everybody knows that you got to hunt to kill him. You know, you've got to be there. You got to put in the hours and all that to hunt him, you know. And he said every time we go hunting, he said, the more chances or the more times you go in there and you don't see him, he said, your chances are getting better. He said, he's going to slip up one day, you know, whether you're hunting here, Kansas or Nebraska, wherever you go, you know.
So I've got your score sheet. I just pulled it up on my phone. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell folks, this deer's a 13 point. Okay. He's got 3 irregular points, and they aren't really big. I think the longest one is 3.5 inches long, 3 4/8. The next one's 3 inches, and then there's one that's 1.5 inches. So he's got exactly nine inches of irregular points. And yep. The rest of them are symmetrical points or typical points. You've got a right main beam that's over 25 inches. It's 25 2/8. You've got a left main beam that is almost 28 inches. It's 27 7/8. You know, and then you've got a tine that's 10 3/8 on the right side, and then one, the longest one on the other side, is 9 4/8. And the rest of them are pretty regular, 8, 7, 5.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, this and other. What sets this deer apart is the mass measurements.
Mm-hmm.
Every mass measurement, all
right.
8,
all the way out,
were over 4 inches. The smallest mass measurement was 4 1/8. The largest, his bases, one, the right side base was 5 7/8. The left side base was 4 7/8.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just goes on from there. I mean, it's just without the inside spread, it's 156 6/8. Hold on. My old man's calling me. Dadgummit.
Uh-huh.
I hit the wrong darn button. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know Griswold would call in the middle of the podcast. That's about right, ain't it?
Yeah. Oh, when it went off, I said, surely I didn't hit nothing.
No, it was me. You know, iPhone, I gotta tell the folks at Apple, and I know ain't nobody at Apple listening to this, but you got to make it a little bit easier to decline a call because you got so many buttons flash up. I'm like, what are we going to do? Oh, my God. All right, so look. So like I said, the base is 5 7/8. Next base is 4 7/8, and then they just go from there. 156 6/8. Bone. That's
straight bone.
Straight bone. 156 inches of bone. Then you pull in that inside measurement, 17 5/8. That's where you get that 174 3/8. Cause, whoo, Lord Jesus, that's a big boy.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, just like everybody I've talking to, I mean, they said, man, that is a deer of a lifetime. And one old boy told me a scene, and he said, I don't know if you know it really yet. But he said, that is, I know everybody's been telling you, he said, but that, I'm telling you, that's a deer of a lifetime. I said, man, I know he's a good one, and I know I've had nothing but, you know, good feedback from everybody as far as me killing it. And I said, but it's been super special, you know. It's definitely one that you can't forget all the stuff that's happened as far as, you know, just everybody, the temperament of everybody since I've, you know, killed it. I mean, it's been next to none, you know.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man, this whole interview has been really special to me, dude. I knew your dad had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it had no idea about all the other stuff that went along with it.
Yes, sir.
And there's a connection. I mean, I personally, Joe, I'll be honest with you, I knew you. I've been knowing you for a little while, and I think that I got a stronger connection to you now when I see you, because you and I have been through similar stuff in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, I mean, I'm going to tell you, man, you know, when you were talking about that dream with your daddy and your granddaddy and how it woke you up, because I've been there. I have been there. It's a good feeling and it's a bad feeling.
Oh, yes. It, at the time, you're like, golly, I'm squalling. But, like, Darren, like you said, you want to go back to sleep so you can see, you know, see him again. It's different. Like, you know, you see pictures and you think about them, you know. But, like, when you're in a dream, you know, a lot of dreams is like it's real life, you know. It's like, golly, like, Darren, can I just, like, hug y'all real quick or something, you know. And
yeah.
And when you wake up and you're like, man, like you said, you want to go back to sleep so you can see him again, you know?
Yeah, it's the weirdest, you know, and if you've never experienced it, you know, part of me wants to say, I hope you never experience it. And then part of me is like, I hope you do, because it's
bittersweet for sure.
Dude, it's one of the coolest things, you know, it's one of the coolest things. And for him to, and I know when you saw that deer, the big one, that he and your granddaddy, you know, were part of your thoughts.
Yep.
Well, buddy, hey, look, man, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day. Come on and talk to us. This is going to be, I say it all the time. This is my favorite podcast. This is probably going to be my, for sure, this is one of my tops, you know. You got such a good story. You've got such a good story. And I really appreciate you listening to it. Hey, I'll listen to it. I'd listen to it 100 more times if I could.
Yeah, man. It does. It means a lot to me. And like I said, that environment up there at K&M was just, next to none, man. Like I said, I'll never forget it. And this has been a good deal right here.
Well, look, cuz, I thank you. You have your good evening, and I hope you can listen to this and be proud of it. I'm going to do all I can to make it something good for you.
Shoot, yeah. Well, I sure appreciate it.
Right.
I really do.
All right, dude. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Yes, sir.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did recording it. It has been a privilege for me the last 2 days to work on this podcast, trying to make this one something special. Sunday, before I talked with Joe, and I know religion is personal for everybody, but I went, you know, I go to church and I walked in a church house and I just said a quick prayer. I said, God, please give me something out of this message. And let me tell you, it was spot on for this podcast. The preacher talked about what he's been doing the last few weeks as he's been breaking down movies and talking about the spiritual aspect in movies. We went over one of the great, great movies, Christmas movies of all time, It's a Wonderful Life. And so I'm sitting here, and at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, Clarence, you know, if you remember the movie, George opens up the letter, the little card from Clarence, and it says, "No man is a failure who has friends." And I'm going to tell you something. Joe Simmons' life will never be a failure. He has such good friends in his life, such good people in his life. We should all strive not only to have friends like Joe Simmons has, but to be the friend that Joe Simmons is. Joe, thank you for letting me be a part of this. This is an extra special deal for me. I don't think I'll ever forget it. Guys, my name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And as always, I'm encouraging you to live your life past 20 yards. We'll see you next time.